Hold it. The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
And you tell them one thing, just win, baby.
I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden.
Bay's Golden Days. I'm Marcus Boucher, and we are back with another UFC Aftermath podcast, and aka San Jose is back with another belt to bring home to San Jose, California, baby. That's right. Daniel Cormier is now the heavyweight champion of the world, and we got to change his name from DC Daniel Cormier to DC the double champ. Yes, you heard me correctly. The heavyweight champ, the light heavyweight champ. This guy does it all, and he brings back the heavyweight title to San Jose, California, to American Kickboxing Academy. Man, oh man, what a time it is to be a fight fan, especially here in the Bay Area. We got the greatest fight camps with AKA San Jose. We got Alpha Male up north in Sacramento. We got Team Scrap Pack in the 209, Stockton motherfucker holding it down. Man, oh man, what a time it is to be alive and a UFC fan right now, right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. So we're going to go ahead and break down everything that happened from UFC 226, starting off from Daniel Cormier's historic knockout over Stipe Miocic in the first round to go into the GOAT conversation. Am I even saying that? It was just a year ago we watched this guy get knocked out by John Jones, and now he's potentially one of the greatest of all times. We'll get into all the conversations of if DC is in the GOAT. Is he on that Mount Rushmore? And what's next for DC? The man's 39 years old. He's only got 2-3 more fights, maybe. We'll see. We'll talk about all the things that happened in the octagon on 226 of Brock Lesnar storming the cage, calling Stipe a piece of shit, calling Francis a piece of shit. We'll talk about Stipe. We'll talk about John Jones. We'll talk about Alexander Gustafsson. We'll talk about all the future fights for Daniel Cormier and how he's going to top off his legacy as he looks to become one of the greatest of all times. We'll go ahead and talk about the snoozer from UFC 226, Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis. The Black Beast did not come out and put on performance. What a bust that was. It was looking like Michael Jackson versus CM Punk. But hey, we'll get into that when we get into that. We had a fight of the night, Mike Perry, Paul Felder. We had Showtime Pettis coming back and beating Michael Chiesa. Paulo Costa got to erase Uriah Hall in the second round. Dan Hooker looked fantastic. I told you to keep an eye out on all these guys on our past UFC 225 Aftermath podcast. So we're going to go ahead and talk about everything that happened during International Fight Week, from the Ultimate Fighter finale on Friday night when Israel Adesanya, the last style bender, dominated Brand Tavares for 5 straight rounds. Bracatona and Michael Trezano, the new tough winners. Hell, we'll talk about all the newest notes, the newest coaches for the Ultimate Fighter, and then we'll look ahead what's coming up next. We got a lot of fights lined up until UFC 227. We got UFC Fight Night Boise, Idaho. We got UFC Fight Night Hamburg, Germany. We got UFC Fight Night Calgary, Canada. Man, oh man, we got some good fight cards coming up, all leading up to UFC 227. The rematch. Yes, the rematch of TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt and the rematch of Demetrius Johnson versus Henry Cejudo. Man, oh man, do we got some fantastic matchups coming up ahead in the next UFC month. We'll go ahead and check out the calendar, check out what's next, check out the news and notes. We're going to check out everything right here on the Bay's Golden Days podcast. So let's go ahead and start it off with the Bay Area's own Daniel Cormier winning his second belt in the epic super fight. This was the best versus the best.
Warning from the referee, Kevin McDonald, for Uzdemir to get out of there.
But he can't.
And that is it. Daniel Cormier defends in style tonight.
I've heard and knew. I've heard and still.
And there's the tap. And still, Daniel Cormier has done it.
What have I not done? You know, I've done it all. At the end of all this, when I ride off into the sunset at however old I am, and people remember, like, man, you know, that damn Daniel Cormier, that dude used to scrap. So I think about legacy. I think about How do I continue to build my legacy?
Yeah, don't worry about legacy. You know, I'm just going to keep winning.
Stipe Miocic!
What motivates me, shut people up.
Oh, that's it! It's all over! I'm a world champ! I'm talking about! I'm a world champ!
Everyone, you know, doesn't pick me. You know, they said I'm not worthy enough. I love it. It fuels me.
This guy's a phenom. He's one in a million. Blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? He lost.
You made history tonight, Stipe. You became the first man to defend the heavyweight title 3 times.
Hell yeah! I'm the greatest heavyweight. That's still mine. I ain't going nowhere.
Who do you think will be next for Stipe? Some people probably like to see DC move up at this point in time.
DC versus Stipe Miocic is a very interesting fight.
These guys fighting each other makes sense right now. The best of the best have fallen to Stipe.
Big shots! Then it's all over!
Same thing with DC at 205. He's taking out all the challengers.
And it's all over! Daniel Cormier is the light heavyweight champion!
It isn't just about wins, it isn't just about losses. Both of these guys are chasing history. This is the time for them to fight one another and find out who is one of the all-time greats.
I mean, most guys wouldn't do what I'm attempting to do, but I wouldn't do it if I didn't expect to win.
Daniel Cormier!
I want to become a two-division champion. I want to be a guy that goes down in history. And what better way to do it than against a guy like Stipe Miocic?
No one will ever take this away from me. Not gonna happen. I worked way too damn hard to get this belt. And I ain't giving up this belt for a long time. I tell you that right now.
Champion versus champion. The best versus the best. This is what MMA is all about. The battle of the matchups, the battle of the styles, the battle of the baddest man on the planet. And the baddest man is now Daniel Cormier. Some people are calling him the daddest man on the planet because he is the dad of MMA. Let's just be honest. He has been great since he's been a commentator. Everybody, it seems like, has done a completely 360 versus the days where he was telling Jon Jones he's a bad boy and he's going to get in trouble and he was trying to be too much of a father figure. Now he's just a friendly dad, Daniel Cormier. Everybody loves him. Everybody thinks he's hilarious. And now everybody thinks he's the baddest man on the planet because, as I mentioned, Daniel Cormier, heavyweight champion of the world, light heavyweight champion of the world, brings home the heavyweight championship back to his best friend and teammate, Cain Velasquez. This is now AKA's 5th UFC championship belt for their 4 homegrown horsemen. Well, homegrown is arguably, DC is not from the Bay Area. He's from Lafayette, Louisiana. That's where Louisiana Dan is going to come out and play down the SmackDown. But, hey, he is an adopted Bay Area kid. He lives in Gilroy. He's the head coach at Gilroy High School now. Giving back to the community. The man trains in San Jose. He said, hey, I got to bring this belt back to San Jose.
Tomorrow night, I raise my 2nd belt. Take it back to San Jose.
That's right, DC holding it down for the Bay, the 5th one for AKA's 4 horsemen. Like I said, Luke Rockhold, former middleweight champion, Cain Velasquez, the heavyweight champion, DC's number one training partner, and then we all know Khabib Nurmagomedov, the future of AKA, the future of the Bay Area, the future of MMA, in my opinion, GSP 2.0. This guy might be joining DC in the GOAT conversation before it's all said and done, but let's focus on the fighters in this fight, Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. DC, wow. Welcome back to heavyweight. He is now 14-0 as a heavyweight. He is undefeated, never lost a round, never lost a wrestling match. He said he's never lost anything at heavyweight, and he said Stipe Miocic is going to be the one to do it. Well, hey, a lot of people thought Stipe Miocic could do it because if you're looking at his legacy, looking at his credentials, he is the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time. He's the only UFC heavyweight to ever defend his belt 3 times. The closest to that is Cain Velasquez 2 times. To me, it is a toss-up between Cain Velasquez and Stipe Miocic for the greatest UFC heavyweight. If you want to go all time, of course, we could throw Fedor into that mix. But let's just stick to UFC. Cain Velasquez and Stipe Miocic are 2 of the greatest. And, hey, because of Cain Velasquez's injuries, dealing with all these back problems, DC versus Stipe might be the closest thing that we ever get from Stipe versus Cain Velasquez, and DC held it down for his best friend, held it down for his gym, and held it down for the Bay Area by knocking out Stipe in the first round. And this was just beautiful work by DC. He came in actually heavier than Stipe into this fight. Stipe is usually around 243, 244. DC came in at 246. Now, he said he was going to come into this fight about 235. He lied. He came in 10 pounds heavier, but the reason why he came in 10 pounds heavier is because he was telling everybody. He told Michael Bisping on Fox Sports before the fight even happened. He said, "I've been dropping people at practice. My knockout power is back." He said at 240, sparring with big boxing gloves, 16-ounce gloves, he was dropping people in practice, something that he's not doing at 205. We all know about the long history of Daniel Cormier dropping down to 205 because obviously Cain Velasquez was a heavyweight champion, so he wanted to go down a weight class. That's the only weight class he's ever lost to, and we know obviously that he lost to John Jones, but Daniel Cormier, the things that he puts his body through to get to 205, I mean, we all know towel gate. We've seen him lean on the towel. We see all the old wrestling tricks that he pulls out. Daniel Cormier at heavyweight, though, this is his weight class. This is where DC shines his best. This is where DC gets to carry all that weight. Hell, we saw what he did in the past versus Josh Burnett, versus Frank Mir, versus Big Nog, versus all these heavyweights from the past where DC was a top five heavyweight before he even moved down to light heavyweight. So at the end of the day, it truly is amazing to see all the things that DC has done. Just a year ago, as I mentioned in this intro, he just got knocked out by John Jones less than a year ago. He comes back. That fight is ruled a no contest because we all know what John Jones is going through. Gets his 205 belt back, gets the heavyweight belt back, and now he can finally say something that John Jones has never done. Because obviously, you must have heard me on the last UFC Aftermath podcast. I said John Jones is the GOAT in my opinion. We can get into failed drug tests, if he's doing blow. I don't really care at the end of the day. If I had to pick one man to fight anybody else, if I had to pick one man to fight an alien race, I would pick John Jones. But legacy-wise, John Jones has fallen a couple steps on that pedestal. George St. Pierre is up there number one. You want to talk about the double champ? Well, Daniel Cormier is now in that same conversation. He now joins GSP, Randy Couture, BJ Penn, and Conor McGregor as the only two division champions. Of course, him and Conor McGregor are the only two people to hold them two simultaneously, but I think there's a lot more comparisons between Randy Couture and Daniel Cormier than there is between Daniel Cormier and Conor McGregor. DC and Conor McGregor are just champ. That's pretty much what the legacy ends at, because Conor, while he did win two belts in Cage Warriors before he came to the UFC and did fight up a weight class, DC truly won it in Strikeforce as a heavyweight champion. I mean, I guess there's no really difference. They're both championship belts, but Strikeforce, in my opinion, was a little bit highly regarded than Cage Warriors, which is just an international program. But at the end of the day, DC is now a two-division champ. He's the first light heavyweight and heavyweight champion since Randy Couture. And you want to talk about that wrestling style? Dominic Cruz was talking about it all week. He said that Greco-Roman wrestling style is huge for heavyweights because you can control the striking, you can slow him down, you can tie him up. And that's exactly what Daniel Cormier did in this first round against Stipe Miocic. He came in, he went straight for the collar tie, tried to get him in the clinch, and he actually gave up the underhook. Yes, we know how much Dominic Cruz loves to talk about the underhook. He gave up the underhook, kind of a limp arm, to try to get Stipe Miocic closer to engage him in the grappling, because one thing that Stipe has never fought is a better grappler than himself. Stipe is a great grappler, but you're not going to find a better grappler than Daniel Cormier. He's in the Olympics, a silver medalist. You want to talk about getting inside, getting in that dirty boxing range. You don't want to stay outside versus Stipe Miocic. He'll pick you apart. I mean, he's 6'4". Let's just be honest. But DC did a great job, gave up that underhook so that he could get in close on the body, because when you're that close, DC is obviously going to have the advantage. He split from the clinch through the right and just drops Stipe, gets on top from ground and pound, 3, 4, 5 punches to the jaw, and it's all over, folks. DC is the double champ. And man, oh man, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. It's literally the craziest thing. It's the best example of MMA for you. Just a year ago, this guy was turned into a meme after getting head kicked by the GOAT. Now he beats arguably the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time, and now he's in the GOAT conversation. Man, oh man, this is crazy to wrap my head around, but I gotta be honest with you. DC is creeping his way into the top five. I said on the last podcast, on the UFC 225 Aftermath podcast, the winner of this fight gets that number five spot on my Mount Rushmore. Yes, I know there's only four spots on Mount Rushmore, but fuck it. I'm opening up a fifth spot, and Daniel Cormier is officially in that top five UFC fighters of all time, in my opinion. The only problem is where do you put him? Yes, he's in that top five, but he's out here saying he's number one. Everybody's saying, oh, he's number two. He automatically jumps up over John Jones. Me, I say maybe number three. You see, here's the situation. I laid it out on the last podcast, UFC 225 Aftermath. I said GSP, legacy-wise, number one. John Jones, I said it earlier, if I had to pick a one-on-one fight, anybody versus anybody, any species versus any species, I'm picking Johnny Bones Jones for the fucking W. But this is where the conversation gets interesting, because DC all week long was saying, if you've ever failed a drug test, it disqualifies you from being in that GOAT conversation. So according to Daniel Cormier, no John Jones, no Anderson Silva, even though they're taking penis pills and all types of rubby-dubby-dubby stuff to rub yourself down. And hey, I'm not doing any accusations, because growing up, Anderson Silva and John Jones have been gods to me. They've been idols. And this might be a little biased, but the way I look at things, especially in the Anderson Silva area, ain't nobody he was fighting was clean. Hell, John Jones, we all saw Vitor Belfort when he almost snapped John Jones's arm off. It, for damn sure, he wasn't clean. We all know the TRT days of Vitor Belfort. But in my eyes, regardless of everything that's happening, it's GSP 1, John Jones 2. Before this fight, I had Demetrius Johnson 3, Anderson Silva 4, and then that fifth spot was reserved for either Stipe or DC. And like I said, I'm going to give it to the guy who won it, because this was a huge fight. I wasn't joking around when I said this is a super fight. This had huge implications on it. And Daniel Cormier moves into that number 5 spot. And then if he goes with the whole steroid argument, and even technically he beat Anderson Silva. I know it was on a couple days' notice at UFC 200 when John Jones got pulled out. That was actually one of the biggest turning moments for me on Daniel Cormier, because we saw the behind-the-scenes footage on the UFC Embedded when he was like, I'll still fight John Jones. Fuck it. I don't care if he failed the drug test. Get him in there. I want to fight him. He just really wanted to avenge that loss so badly. Well, he steps in a couple days' notice, beats Anderson Silva. Wasn't the greatest performance, but still, he took out Anderson Silva. That's one of the most dangerous guys of all time. A lot of people give him shit because he outweighed him by 20, 30, 50 pounds. Who the hell knows? And he just tried to wrestle him, but it's a smart game plan. DC got his win, got his win bonus, and he added to his legacy. There's not too many people that say they could beat Anderson Silva. And this wasn't no Michael Bisping fluke over Anderson Silva. This was a true victory over Anderson Silva. So that right there alone moves him up from number 5 to number 4. And let me clarify the reasons why Demetrius Johnson was above Anderson Silva. It's just because he's still undefeated at his weight class. Yes, he has lost before. That's the reason why I don't consider him the GOAT over GSP, because he has never avenged his loss to Dominic Cruz. We'll get more into that later in the 227 preview. But now I've got Daniel Cormier also jumping over Demetrius Johnson into that 3-hole. So I've got GSP, John Jones, and then Daniel Cormier. And I can't move Daniel Cormier up any more higher than number 2, because honestly, already moving him past Demetrius Johnson's pretty big, but I think that the accomplishment of going 14-0 at heavyweight outweighs going 14-0 at 125 pounds or whatever Demetrius Johnson's record is. I know he's got 11 title defenses, just past Anderson Silva, even though Anderson should have had more than that, but a couple guys didn't make weight, blah, blah, blah. Demetrius Johnson, by far, it's impressive what he's doing. I've been saying it for years. I've been saying it since everybody was on the Ronda Rousey hype train, before anybody even had Demetrius in the GOAT conversation. I was like, why is no one paying any attention to DJ? He's doing exactly what Ronda Rousey is doing it with this infant of a division that's coming up. Yeah, it's got some better talent in it now, but I honestly didn't think it was above Anderson Silva, but the fact that he's done it for so long, I do move DJ up to that number 3 spot. But like I said, I have DC hopping over Demetrius into that number 3 spot. I know it's getting a little confusing here, but I like DC. 2 weight classes, that's huge. GSP 2 weight classes, obviously. The problem I have, though, is just I got to be realistic. I can't move Daniel Cormier past John Jones. I mean, some people are going to say, hey, well, you know, the fight, it didn't count. John was on the juice. He was on the blow, man, the fucking blow. John Jones even came out and said, I just did coke all week and still whooped your ass. But
at the end of the day, you can call it a no contest. We all saw the leg kick that dropped him and then the ground and pound that finished him off. As much as I hate to make fun of the guy, we all saw the crying Daniel Cormier meme and how it pretty much almost surpassed the crying Jordan meme. And now here we are. Does this really set up Daniel Cormier to be the GOAT? Or does this set up part three, the super fight between John Jones and Daniel Cormier at heavyweight? Yes, you heard me, at heavyweight, because I think that's the only way this fight makes sense. Obviously, John Jones, a 205 king. Daniel Cormier, now the two-weight champion. We don't really know what's next for him, going back and forth, back and forth. But let me focus on this John Jones-Daniel Cormier controversy real quick. I think John Jones comes back at heavyweight because when John Jones came back and beat DC the first time, he's the one who called out Brock Lesnar. He's the one who said, Lesnar, get your shit together, pass the USADA test, blah, blah, blah. He wanted that heavyweight fight. This could have been John Jones taking out Stipe Miocic. It's sad, really, when you think about all the potential that John Jones has. John Jones is still a decently young guy. He's still in his young 30s, and I have no doubt about it in my mind that he's going to come back. He saw what Georges St-Pierre did after taking a four-year hiatus, coming back and winning the championship belt. If that doesn't motivate you, I don't know what does. We had John Jones's manager on the MMA show with Ariel Helwani or whatever the hell his new ESPN show is called. He said that he's going to come back. He should be getting a decision from USADA in a month or two. So John Jones versus DC at heavyweight? But is that going to be DC's next fight? Because, man, oh, man, were the casuals out in full force. Actually, I was surprised seeing this many people pay attention to UFC this weekend. I know DC got some eyes on him with that knockout, but he definitely got some eyes on him after the fight in his call-out. He moved straight on past John Jones. There was no John Jones get your shit together moment this time. He said, I want you, Brock Lesnar. I'm the guy, Joe. I never thought I'd be in this ring with two belts. This is my moment. This is my time. And this is my time for a super fight. And he wants Brock Lesnar. And here he is, Daniel Cormier, calling out Brock at UFC 226.
I am 39 years old. And I've been second a lot of times. But today, I finally accomplished everything. From crying in this very same octagon last year, almost a year to the day, to becoming the UFC heavyweight champion. Joe, it is the most amazing thing I've ever experienced. Now, Joe, let me get this microphone for a second. Hey, listen to DC. Listen to DC. There's a guy that I've known for a long time. He's a wrestler. He's an All-American. He's a former UFC champion. I never thought I would fight him, but Brock Lesnar, get your ass in here.
Let me tell you something. I walked into this building and watched the heavyweight disasters from the beginning. Nagano's a piece of shit. Miocic's a piece of shit. DC, I'm coming for you, motherfucker.
DC, I'm coming for you, motherfucker. Who the hell does this guy think he is? Is he a Diaz brother now? You're taking everything I work for, motherfucker. Fuck you, Brock Lesnar. I can't wait for this fight. The WWE champion is coming back to the UFC to get knocked the fuck out by a wrestler. Louisiana Dan is going to put this man in his place. I can almost guarantee it. Man, oh man, I am glad for Louisiana Dan. He deserves his opportunity. He deserves his paycheck. And he deserves to beat the living shit out of Brock Lesnar. Who does Brock think he is? Leaving the UFC after he got his fucking brain scrambled by Cain Velasquez, goes to WWE, comes back in, starts talking shit about the heavyweight division, saying, Ngannou's a piece of shit, Stipe's a piece of shit. Well, hey, don't go after Stipe. He's one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. I guarantee you Stipe would have beat the shit out of Brock Lesnar if he were to win. Francis Ngannou, we don't know because the man doesn't know how to wrestle. And after his last performance, who would have known? But he's going to come in there and talk shit to Stipe and then talk shit to DC, this fake wrestling motherfucker. Oh, I cannot wait for this fight. And man, oh man, the casuals came out in full force like, oh, where'd this WWF wrestling come from? I didn't know the UFC was the WWE. Newsflash, this is not Brock Lesnar's first appearance. Newsflash, as I mentioned, John Jones called out Brock Lesnar. Newsflash, if you listen to the Bay's Golden Days UFC 225 Aftermath podcast, I said the winner of this fight was going to get Brock Lesnar. Where's Nate Diaz at?
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
I'm not surprised, motherfucker. I'm not surprised by any of this at all. And a lot of people are saying, well, hey, Brock doesn't deserve it. What has Brock ever done? And hey, that's a fair argument. He was a former champion himself, but as DC said, that was back in 2010. That's the damn near Stone Age and MMA days, but you got to look at it. Who does deserve it? If you even want to look at it that way. Yes, I agree. Curtis Blaydes, after those elbows that he landed on Alistair Overeem, I think he deserves a shot, but DC came out and said, I'm not fighting Curtis Blaydes. He's not a big enough name. That's not a money fight. So who else is there in the heavyweight division? Because we saw in the co-main event, Francis Ngannou versus the Black Beast was an absolute snooze fest. I've never built up a fight so much. I said on the last podcast, this fight alone is going to be worth your pay-per-view dollars. I'm sorry. I owe you a refund. This was the one fight on the card that didn't live up to the hype. It was terrible. Like I said at the beginning of this podcast, it was like watching Michael Jackson versus CM Punk. I didn't know what was going on. You had the two heavyweights with the most knockouts in the division right now active. And they barely even swung. It makes no fucking sense at all. Francis came out after and said, oh, I fought scared. Black Beast said he had a hurt back. Well, hey, both of you just lost your chance for the number one contender. You're not going to fight for the belt now, especially not with that performance. Francis has got to go down, figure out some shit. The Black Beast, he's not going to get a title shot after that. I mean, maybe he fights Stipe now. Maybe Stipe fights Cain Velasquez, like I said earlier. But who else is there at heavyweight besides Curtis Blaydes? And DC already said he doesn't want to fight Curtis Blaydes. But what is he going to do? Go back down to light heavyweight, which he said that he might do because the news is he's 39 years old. You heard him in that clip. He wants to fight into his 40th birthday. His 40th birthday is in March. He's trying to fit two more fights in between that time frame. The only problem with the Brock Lesnar time frame is Brock Lesnar is still suspended by USADA. He's still suspended until January. He's not going to be able to fight until January. His last win was at UFC 200 over Mark Hunt, but he wasn't even in the USADA testing pool. He somehow nilly-dillied his way, danced around the drug testing, but everybody knows he's on the sauce. And DC said, I'm not fighting him if he's on the juice. If he's on the Mexican supplements, I don't want him. I'll do extra testing. I'll pay for extra testing. I'll do whatever I got to do, but Brock is going to be clean. Well, if he needs 6 months to get clean, he needs 6 months just to be back in the probation pool, what's next for DC? Does he go back down the light heavyweight? I don't think he'd want to do that to his body, but he said this weekend, hey, Alexander Gustafsson, if you have an impressive performance at UFC 227, then you can get it again. Hell, at light heavyweight, he called out Shogun Hua. I know Shogun's a huge name, but Shogun's way past his prime. I know DC's up there at 39 years old, so, I mean, they are kind of close in age range, and it would be, I guess, kind of a super fight, but I don't even look at Shogun like that anymore. Man, crazy. And then the latest rumors are Yoel Romero's calling him out for the 205 belt. Yoel Romero, the soldier of God, who just put on probably fight of the year performance at UFC 225 against Robert Whittaker, he wants to move up and get a title shot. This doesn't make too much sense to me. There was rumors that he was going to fight Alexander Gustafsson at 205. Obviously, Gus got his matchup with Volkan no time. Hell, I would have liked to see Gus versus Luke Rockhold. He was calling out DC's AKA teammate. But what does this mean for the 205 division? DC came out, he said, maybe Gus, if he puts on something spectacular. Maybe Shogun, if he gets a win. His response to Yoel was, you don't get to fail a test and move up a grade, which I think is fair, but I would love to see that fight between Yoel and DC. Obviously, they both have Olympic wrestling pedigree. That would be a great matchup. And then there's the John Jones fight, like we said. Does he come back at 205? Does John Jones try to fight the winner of Alexander Gustafsson versus Volkan no time
for the 205 interim belt, but Jones isn't fighting for another 205 interim belt. I think the only two fights that make sense is get Brock Lesnar one more time. I know DC wants to come back in like November, but if he could hold out till January, make quick work of Brock Lesnar, and then John Jones at heavyweight is the fight to make. It doesn't make sense to fight John Jones first, because if you lose, then you lose the Brock Lesnar fight. And that's the biggest thing for me with this whole Brock Lesnar situation, where people say, he doesn't deserve it, he doesn't deserve it. You know who does deserve it? Daniel Cormier. DC deserves it. 39 years old, always been second fiddle to John Jones or Chael Sonnen when he lost in the Olympics. I mean, it's been crazy, the road that this guy's been through to finally be a heavyweight champion, because no one can take that away from him. People said, oh, you're the paper champ, you're not the real light heavyweight champ until you beat John Jones. No one can take away the heavyweight championship of the world from Daniel Cormier. And if there's one guy that deserves a money fight, it's DC. He's 39 years old. He's got two fights left. I mean, what else is there for him? Maybe a Stipe rematch, but Stipe's got to get it in there and get a win first. And like I've mentioned a couple times now, I want to see Stipe Miocic versus Cain Velasquez. Please, 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 please bring back Cain Velasquez. I just want to see him fight one, two more times. He's still training. He's still on the tough coaching staff. Whatever. I just want to see Cain. But if Cain doesn't come back, maybe we get Stipe versus Junior Dos Santos. They could do the trilogy there. I think that's a great matchup, but not too many options at heavyweight. Not even too many options at light heavyweight. We got the rematches for DC. Who knows? But at the end of the day, Daniel Cormier is the double champ. Let's just take a second to take that all in one more time before I move on. Daniel Cormier is the motherfucking double champ. Screw the co-main event, because that wasn't even supposed to be the co-main event. Really, honestly, I'm getting butthurt over this heavyweight fight. That wasn't even supposed to be the co-main event. Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega, that would have been a fucking banger, but we all know the news with Max Holloway pulling out once again. He says it wasn't weight-cutting issues. They said he had concussion-like symptoms before the weight cut even started. That's scary to think about. Max Holloway, prayers and blessings go to you for the blessed one. There were rumors that maybe they could get him back in time for the main card for UFC 227 down in LA, and that would have been a fucking banger of a card. But I don't think that's going to happen. So as soon as Max get back, the better. But let's go ahead and run down the rest of this 226 card, because like I said, the main event was fuego. The co-main event, not so fuego. That was muy, muy frío. Then we move on. We had the fight of the night. In my opinion, Danny didn't give out no fight of the nights, but Paul Felder versus Mike Platinum Perry. You thought you had a dub, boy. Mike Platinum Perry is one of the most interesting guys in the UFC, from his off-the-mat antics to everything that he says in his interviews to the way he fights, the way he throws elbows. Him versus Paul Felder, the Irish Dragon, was an absolute war. They started off with a headbutt in the first, like, 5 seconds. Both had gashes. Both split their shit right down the middle, were leaking blood. The whole entire cage was looking red. Next thing you know, Platinum Perry is just unleashing bows left and right. Paul Felder is throwing all these spinning back fists, actually breaks his arm, he said, in the first round against Platinum Perry. And he was still throwing it. He was still coming forward. And this is what we want to see. It was an absolute war. It was a barn burner. It actually went to decision. This was Mike Platinum Perry's first win by decision. I believe he's got 11 knockouts. He's got 12 wins total. 11 knockouts for this guy. And I'm really impressed by Mike Platinum Perry, because he left his girlfriend. Literally, he had his ex-girlfriend in his corner calling his fights along with a couple other buddies. And he went to one of the best gyms in all the country, Jackson Winklejohn's down in Arizona. He's training with the likes of John Jones, Donald Cerrone, Holly Holm, and all the best fighters down there. I think Mike Perry is definitely on the upward trend in the welterweight division. First pay-per-view card, got the fight on International Fight Weekend. Mike Platinum Perry is always a blessing to watch. What else did we have on this main card? We had the return of Showtime Pettis. Is it Showtime? Is it official? I don't know. It was just Michael Chiesa. Michael Chiesa was kind of struggling with the weight class. He said he's done at 155, going back up to 170. But Anthony Pettis did look good. He said he changed up his style. He said he was getting too tentative, said he was worried about trying to defend the takedowns too much. But, hey, now he's just going to throw his kicks and submit, because he's got the most, I think, submissions in the lightweight division. I mean, he's done ridiculous things off his back in that triangle, and then we know what he can do on his feet, obviously. Anthony Pettis, it's good for him to get a few wins underneath him. Hopefully the ball gets rolling and he can pick up some momentum, because it seemed like the last couple years he turned himself into a little bit of a gatekeeper. Michael Chiesa is some decent competition, won the Ultimate Fighter, but I'd like to see Anthony Pettis get back on track slowly but surely. We don't need to throw him into a top five fighter or anything, but it's good to see Showtime Pettis back in action. And then let's go ahead and check out some of these prelim fighters. I told you, watch out for my boy Paulo Costa. Paulo Borrachinha, the Eraser Costa. This guy is the next face of Brazilian MMA. Yeah, I mean, I've been a huge fan since he absolutely dusted Johnny Hendricks. I mean, he's been fantastic. He was on the Ultimate Fighter Brazil. He's undefeated. He's just knocking people out left and right. And this was a great fight against Uriah Hall. Usually, Paulo Costa towers over his opponents. I believe he's only like 6 foot, but fighting out at 185, this guy looks like a fucking brick house. Brick by brick. I don't know what he's on. He's like Yoel Romero times two, the Brazilian version, and he looks like goddamn Clark Kent. I mean, this guy is just unspeakable. And then the things that he did to Uriah Hall. Uriah Hall came out and actually looked pretty damn good. He used the jab, kept the distance. We all know he's going to come throw some of that spinning shit. But Paulo Costa bit down on his mouthpiece. First time I've really seen him bleed. Kept on coming forward. Kept on throwing those hooks, kept on going to the body and just landed some devastating, just liver, kidney, you'll never drink again. Uriah drops him. He goes down and it's another TKO for Paulo Costa. He got the win bonus on a night. And then on the fight pass prelims, I told you guys, watch out for Dan Hooker. The man has been absolutely on fire since he's moved up the weight class. He had another first round knockout against Gilbert Burns. Dan Hooker has looked amazing. And then you want to talk about everything that's going on down in Australia. His partner the night before, Israel Adonise, on the Ultimate Fighter finale, first main event, first five round card. A lot of people said, hey, Brad Tavares, that's one tough mother sucker. You don't want to test your skills against him standing up for five rounds. But Israel Adonise, the last style bender, took that challenge and flourished with absolutely flying colors. He dominates Brad Tavares for five straight rounds. Honestly, he didn't even look like he was in a fight at the end of the fight. People compare him to a young John Jones. He doesn't like those comparisons at all, but this kid is another young Anderson Silva. His body movement, he's 6'4 and fighting at 185. He called out Paulo Costa. He said he wanted the winner of Costa versus Uriah Hall, but honestly, I don't want to see that fight because these are two of my favorite young up-and-coming fighters in that 185 division. It's getting a little stale at the top, let's be honest. When we're looking at Gastelum or Weidman for the top contender, when they beat each other, it's kind of canceling each other out. I think we need some new blood in this division like we're seeing in the welterweight division with Darren Till and Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington. I think Israel Adonise and Paulo Costa are that next wave of 185 fighters, so I don't want to see them fight now. I want to see them both get built up. And then in a super fight eventually. I think that's the matchup to make. But in the meantime, Paulo Costa called out Chris Weidman. He wants to move up his ranks as fast as possible. I would love to see that fight. I don't know if Chris Weidman wants to see that fight because after standing across the cage from Yoel Romero, I don't think you want anything of similar body type or similar power or anything really. But we'll see what happens with Paulo Costa and Israel Adonise. Two names to keep an eye out for sure in that middleweight division. And let's show some love to the youngins coming up on the Ultimate Fighter finale. Bracatona won the 145 Ultimate Fighter, and Michael Trezano actually won the Ultimate Fighter at 155. I will say that Joe Giante actually gave away that third round in that 155 matchup. I thought he was winning the first two rounds, but then started talking shit a little bit and honestly just gave the fight away, which I don't know why it's the Ultimate Fighter finale. I mean, do you want to be an Ultimate Fighter? Have you seen Forrest Griffin versus Stephen Bonner? This is the platform to boost yourself. This is the platform to put on a show in front of millions and millions of people. And it was just a decent performance. Honestly, though, between the two winners, I was more impressed with Luis Pena, Violent Bob Ross. He's actually out here training in AKA San Jose now. So shout out Violent Bob Ross. Maybe we can get an interview set up sometime. But then also on the card, we had Bryce Mitchell versus Tyler Diamond. I actually thought that was the best fight of the Ultimate Fighters in the house. I think they both deserve a contract. It's going to be interesting to see what happens moving forward with all these Ultimate Fighter fighters. We don't even know if the Ultimate Fighter is going to stick around very much longer. But hey, news break. Let's get to our news and notes. There will be a next Ultimate Fighter. It's going to be Robert Whittaker versus Kevin Gastelum at 185, coaching for the heavyweights. Yes, this will lead to a 185 middleweight title shot for Kevin Gastelum. I think that's going to be one hell of a fight with Kevin Gastelum's boxing and everything. And you can never count Kevin Gastelum out. Hell, when he was on the Ultimate Fighter, he was the last pick of his season. And then he went on and won the whole entire season. And now look at him. He's a coach of the Ultimate Fighter. And he's going to get to go get the title shot versus Robert Whittaker. So shout out Kevin Gastelum, you know, the kid who was born in San Jose. We got to show some love right here on the Bay's Golden Days. You know what it is. But speaking of San Jose,
Man, oh man, do we have a fight card coming towards us? Yes, you know, we don't get UFC fight cards around here. We get Bellator. Bellator and Strikeforce. Shout out to my man Scott Coker. I loved going to Strikeforce shows back in the day. I've never been to a UFC fight card in my life, but I've been to 4 or 5 Strikeforce, probably 6, 7, 8 Bellator events because it's always in San Jose and it seems like they always try to put on the show. I mean, besides that one time Fedor versus Matt Mitrione got canceled, Scott Coker really hasn't let me down. And man, oh man, is he making up for it for Bellator 206. September 29th, the super fight of Bellator. This is probably going to be the biggest fight Bellator has ever put on, but the casuals probably won't even know because it's not Conor McGregor versus Ronda Rousey locked in a tag team steel cage match. But this is still a pretty big fucking fight because we got Rory McDonald versus Gegard Mousasi. Yes, two of the top UFC welterweights and middleweights who both left in their prime to go to Bellator because free agency got cashed out, had a few problems with the UFC brass about title shots, blah, blah, blah. But Rory McDonald, if you don't know, now you know. He's the best welterweight on the planet right now, pound for pound. Put up your money where your mouth is because this is the first time ever Bellator or pretty much any organization besides the organizations who had Fedor when he's on his prime that can say that their champion is better than the UFC champions. Rory McDonald has actually beat the UFC welterweights champion Tyron Woodley. He absolutely dogged in that fight, picked him apart, put him against the fence, took him down, ground and pounded him. And now he's the Bellator champion, Gegard Mousasi, who put up great fights at 185, 205, has been a fighting legend for the past 10, 20 years, it seems like. Hell, I saw Gegard fight in the co-main event of when Chris Cyborg fought Gina Carano. That's how long Gegard Mousasi's been around, and now he's coming back to San Jose. So, man, oh, man, I cannot wait for that fight card. I don't even want to give you a spoiler of who I'm picking yet because that's not until September. I just wanted to put that in my news and notes section because San Jose, you know, we got to show some love for the Bay Area fighting city. You know what it is. And then it's not even done because something for the casual viewers, Rampage versus Wanderlei Silva part 4. Yes, Rampage Jackson versus Wanderlei Silva. Give him all the steroids. Give him all the juice. Give him all the food because Rampage is at heavyweight now. This is going to be a heavyweight fight. I want to see some of that Rampage heavyweight power. He had to fight Chael Sonnen in his first fight at heavyweight in that Bellator Grand Prix, but he doesn't want to fight any more wrestlers. Wanderlei should stand. Let's just be honest. Wanderlei versus Rampage should be a standing and banging event, and then we move on from that, and the Bellator is even going to start the welterweight Grand Prix. I mean, those are what the rumors are. Who are we going to get? We're going to get Pico? Are we going to get Ed Ruth? Who's going to be in this tournament? But, hey, Bellator's coming up. I tell you, Scott Coker is one of the best promoters in the game. He's right up there with Dana White. You look at all these Strikeforce champions. Hell, all of AKA pretty much came through Strikeforce. Scott Coker has had a great hold in the San Jose market, and he's really built the next wave of fighters, and he's got a lot of young talent over in Bellator. I know people like to rag on Bellator all the time, but, hey, they're coming up, and I will be there for sure on September 29th. For Rory the Red King, the Canadian Psycho, versus Gegard, Sassy Mousasi. Man, oh man, I can't wait. But let's not look too far ahead. Let's go ahead and just look at what's next on the UFC fight calendar, give you a quick rundown of what to look for ahead in the next month or two leading up to UFC 227. Like I said, this weekend, Junior Dos Santos is fighting at UFC Fight Night, Boise, Idaho. We've also got Sage Northcutt on the card, Dennis Bermudez. Chad Mendes is making his return versus Mal Jury, so that's a pretty good fight night card right there. Then we go to Hamburg, Germany. Like I mentioned, Shogun is taking on Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith has looked good as late. They gave him Rashad Evans in his last fight. That was the dumbest thing Rashad Evans could have done. Like I said on the podcast, his last 5 fights, Anthony Smith was probably the hardest one of all those fights. But, hey, he accepted it. But, hey, we'll see what happens in Hamburg. I don't think Anthony Smith can win and get a title shot. But DC says if Shogun wins, he might get a title shot. So we'll have to tune in for that. Glover Teixeira is also on that card. And then Mark DeCasse, the Frenchman, I like watching him. He's on that card too, so that's someone to watch out for. And then we get to UFC Fight Night Calgary, going up to Canada, eh? And this is the biggest fight card I've probably ever seen in my life. This is for free, folks. This is free. This is not a pay-per-view event. And we get Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier, the rematch.
Well, if you remember that first fight, it was absolutely crazy until an illegal knee, which might not have been illegal, which Eddie might have been playing possum. But who knows what the hell happened? But all we do know is they're fighting now after both taking out Justin Gaethje, one of the toughest guys, one of the craziest guys in all division. Now they're back for the rematch. So this is the fight that they've both been calling for a while now. So we finally get to see the conclusion of Eddie Alvarez versus Dustin Poirier. And then we get Jose Aldo versus Jeremy Stephens. Jose Aldo in a co-main event on a fight night card? Not even pay-per-view? I mean, he's not even kicking off a pay-per-view card or nothing. He's fighting on fight night? I mean, I'm glad because we get to see Jose Aldo in a three-round war. Hopefully we get some of those soccer kicks back because we know Jeremy Stephens is just going to be throwing hands because when I touch people, those motherfuckers go to sleep. But, hey, shout out Jeremy Stephens. He has talked his shit. He didn't even really need to talk his shit. He said that one thing to Conor McGregor at the press conference, and then he's just been knocking motherfuckers out. He's not even lying. He wanted to step up and fight Brian Ortega for the 145 belt this past weekend. Hell, he wanted to fight Frankie Edgar for the belt this past weekend. I don't know how that makes sense in any world, but hats off to Jeremy Stephens. That guy comes out to fight. He comes to bang, and he's going to bite down on his mouthpiece and just throw some motherfucking haymakers. And, hey, that's what we want to see at the end of the day. So that's going to be great because we love to see Jose Aldo versus aggressive fighters. So that's going to be a great one. And then in the third fight, it's Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Tisha Torres. Hell, a couple months ago, this could have been a strawweight championship fight. Now, obviously, we know that Joanna has lost a couple times to Thug Rose. That second fight was really close, but now Joanna has got a battle back. Tisha Torres, that's a nice little fun matchup. The Tornado versus young champion, but I can't even call it the young champion no more. Joanna, I want to see you get back in there. It was close, to be honest. That last fight between her and Thug Rose was close. I did think Thug Rose got it at the end of the day, but I wouldn't mind seeing a trilogy, especially in that weight class. There's, I mean, how many options do we got? So I want to see Joanna win versus Tisha Torres. But, hey, even Tisha Torres is a fresh matchup because Tisha beat Thug Rose back in Invicta. So, hey, those are some fun matchups there. But, hey, I'm telling you, man, this UFC Fight Night Calgary card, this should be a pay-per-view card, and it's for free. And you're getting the Canadian gangster Olivier Aubin Mercier. I mean, there are some monsters on this card. It is going to be fun to watch from the main card to the prelims. This is absolutely stacked. And then we'll get stacked to the stack to the stack to the back for UFC 227 LA. We're back. Hollywood, say what's up to the people. And this is the rematch card of all rematch cards. Don't take my word for it. Take Joe Rogan's.
This is a championship doubleheader that has the entire MMA world buzzing.
Cody Garbrandt, incredible.
TJ Dillashaw.
It's going to be an amazing rematch for the bantamweight title.
This is a fight that has it all.
Henry Cejudo is hitting a whole new level.
Oh, Demetrius Johnson.
The greatest mixed martial artist ever. Who knows what's going to happen?
That's right, Joe Rogan. Who knows what's going to happen? UFC 227, the battle of the rematches in the main event. We got TJ Dillashaw, the Snake, versus Cody No Love Garbrandt. We all know the history between these two fighters fighting from Team Alpha Male, once former teammates, now sworn enemies. We saw the Ultimate Fighter season when they were coaching and talking shit. It wrenched back all the way to the season where it was Uriah Faber and Conor McGregor as the coaches for the Ultimate Fighter. And Cody No Love tried to fight Conor McGregor over TJ Dillashaw. And now they hate each other. They're fighting each other. And man, oh man, what a first fight card that was. UFC 217 will go down in history as one of the biggest upset cards of all time. All three title fights, upsets win. Well, I don't call GSP over Michael Bisping an upset, but some people did. I don't like to associate myself with those people because I knew GSP was going to win that shit. But back to the topic, Cody Garbrandt lost his belt. Michael Bisping lost his belt. Joanna Jędrzejczyk lost her belt. But, man, the TJ versus Cody one, that was the most intense fight of the night because Cody comes out, drops TJ in the first, talking all that shit. TJ gets up, kind of like that sparring video that Cody was holding hostage for so long. He dropped TJ. TJ got right back up. TJ gets up for the second round, drops Cody, finishes him, gets in his face, and goes in that cobra death stare, looking like he's about to eat him up. TJ Dillashaw gets his belt back, and there was actually some talk that he was going to go down to 125, fight DJ, get the super fight going. But no, now DJ is fighting on the same exact card, which
I don't think it's a coincidence. I think they're trying to line this up so that, A, we finally do get the super fight. Demetrius Johnson will be taking on Henry Cejudo. Cejudo looking like a mini karate hottie lately. I mean, his win over Wilson Reyes and then beating Sergio Pettis. Man, Cejudo has definitely made some improvement in his stand-up game. He's coming out with kind of a karate style, and he's an Olympic wrestler. Yes, he's a gold medal Olympic wrestler. The first time him and DJ fought, DJ dominated him. But he looked like he was fighting just a wrestler. Maybe Henry's skills all around are up there to, on the level of Demetrius Johnson. Maybe they're not. Maybe there's just no competition for DJ at 125. And this is why I think it would be smarter for him to go up and challenge for the belt instead of letting someone come down and challenge for his belt. He's done everything he can at 125. It's his division. He's going to be remembered as the GOAT of that division. It's as simple as that. But to be the greatest of all time, now we're getting into the two-belt era. Now we're getting to the GSPs, the DCs, dare I even say the Conor McGregor, the double champ champs will be having a bigger legacy than Demetrius Johnson. And the biggest thing for me, I want to see him go up, challenge for the 135 belt. I don't care if it's TJ. I don't care if it's Cody. I want him to take out whoever has the belt and then call out Dominic Cruz. Because that's the one criticism I have for Demetrius Johnson throughout his whole entire career is he never avenged his loss. George St. Pierre, that's why he's the GOAT for me, cleared out the welterweight division, impressive win streaks, revenged his only two losses, and he's a two-division champion. Demetrius Johnson is not a two-division champion. Demetrius Johnson has never avenged his loss to Dominic Cruz. That's the fight that I want to see more than TJ Dillashaw, more than Cody Garbrandt, even though those are two great fights for Demetrius Johnson. Hell, go ahead and invite them down to 125, but before it's all said and done, Dominic Cruz is still a top five fighter right now. He's still active. He's still trying to fight. I want to see you take out Dominic Cruz and avenge that loss, and then maybe we can finally start having DJ in the GOAT conversation. But until that happens, you just never know, honestly, because there was always that what if, that shoulda, coulda, woulda. Is he going to do it? Is he not? I don't know. He doesn't need to. He's got nothing to prove to me. But that's one of the things that's keeping him back on the GOAT status, if you're asking me. But let's go ahead and look at the rest of his card. I already mentioned Alexander Gustafsson versus Volkan no time for the number one light heavyweight spot. I think Gus comes out and throws those uppercuts, just spam, spam, spam the uppercuts. He looked absolutely fantastic last time. So I think Alexander Gustafsson does have an impressive win and potentially sets up that fight against Daniel Cormier. But there's a lot of top fighters all over this card. We got Cub Swanson versus Ronaldo Moicano. That's a great young up-and-coming fight. The prelims have a couple undefeated fighters like Benito Lopez from Team Alpha Male. Brett Johns is from Wales. I mean, this card has a lot of talent on it. Derek Brunson's fighting Antonio Carlos Jr. This is one hell of a fight card. Even Ricardo Ramos. I think it's going to be a great fight card. I think it's going to be a great fight week. I think this past week, International Fight Weekend, was great from the Ultimate Fighter finale to UFC 226 to looking forward to UFC 227. You know we cover it all right here on the Bay's Golden Days. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for downloading on iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get your iTunes apps from these days. You can follow us on social media at Bay's Golden Days on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, on MySpace, on Friendster, AOL, send me that instant message. I don't care. Get in contact somehow, some way. Show some love for the show, and we'll show you some love too. You know what it is, baby. It's the Bay's Golden Days. Sold it, sold it, sold it, sold it.
Steady gold, pony boy.